Hey, everybody.
I'm at my mom's house, at my mom's condo, which is also my condo, but I always think of it as hers here in La Vida. But my mom is here now, and she's just feeding me every night. She's acting like a mom. And then I got Cheryl feeding me every day at lunch, and I feel all warm and full and satisfied on the inside. You know, I just finished eating. To be honest, I completely forgot about I Am That. Thank God for the iPhone and its reminders, because when I go, oh my goodness, I have to go teach. But I just finished eating, so I feel all warm and satisfied inside. Mom's home cooking, right? It's very nice. But we are here for I Am That. And I am starting on page 52. This is conversation 18. So we're in the middle of conversation 18, about a quarter away down the page. And in fact, what I have marked begins with Nisargadatta Maharaj speaking, and then going to the questioner next. So about a quarter away down the page on page 52, if you're reading along, you can look for this line where Nisargadatta says, "To be a person, you must be self-conscious. Are you so always?" So we'll see where this conversation goes. But even before I start the conversation, I think I want to reflect on something else that I read once, contemplated deeply, and it changed my outlook. And that was Bernadette Roberts. She has two books. I can't glance over at my bookshelf because I'm not at home. I can't glance over at my bookshelf and cheat and get the names. One of them, I think, was What is the Self, I think. And I don't remember the name of the other one. If I was at home, I'd just look over at my bookshelf and I'd look so smart because I'd be able to just tell you, oh, these two books, but I'd be cheating. Here, I can't cheat. Reading Bernadette Roberts' books, the books are fabulous. And it's funny because even though they're fabulous, I actually don't recommend them for everyone, because I think if you're not completely ready for what she's sharing about, it could scare the crap out of you. That's why I don't recommend them for everyone. When Bernadette Roberts was a young woman, I don't remember exactly what age, but just before, just after the age 20 mark, you know, right in that range, she awoke to consciousness. The rest of her life, up until I don't know what age, but you know, as a mature woman, the rest of her life was spent in the transition from consciousness to the absolute. And what she really writes about in these books is that phase of the journey, which most people don't write about. Most people write about awakening to consciousness. They don't write about from consciousness to the absolute. So she writes about that phase of the journey. And some of the experiences she had were pretty extreme. And again, might scare some people, but what's pretty phenomenal is she talks about how after awakening to, I can't remember if it was when she awakened to consciousness or when she awakened to the absolute. I think it was when she awakened to the absolute. She talks about how there was this self-referencing mechanism in the mind that just completely dies. Self-referencing mechanism. She has a different word for it. I don't remember now, but basically the way it works is, I look at Malkin, for example, and I say, oh, look, Malkin's showing up for my teachings. You see, that's self-referencing, right? I'm looking at Malkin and I'm self-referencing. And that's a natural part of the ego. And I think if I remember correctly, it was even a natural part still to some degree of consciousness, the self-referencing, seeing things from my point of view, although it was a greater point of view. But when you awaken to the absolute, the self-referencing completely dies. Like she talked about it as if it was a mechanism in the brain that completely ends, and there just is no more self-referencing. No more seeing the world and interpreting the world and interpreting events from a me point of view. So, although I don't think that's where Nisargadatta is going in this conversation, we'll find out where he goes. That's what this first line reminds me of, because notice he says, to be a person, You must be self-conscious, right? You have to be conscious of a self. You know, that would be that self-referencing. To be a person, you must be self-conscious. And then he asks the person he's talking to, are you so always? So it almost seems as if he's trying to find out, well, I won't guess what he's doing. Let's just read what the questioner says. The questioner says, not when I sleep, of course, nor when I am in a swoon or drugged. Which sounds like a funny answer. Not when I'm drugged, I'm not. But I think what he might mean is like when you have surgery. That kind of drug, right? You know, when you have surgery and they give you anesthesia and you're under, there's no self-referencing going on, right? You're so, so very under. So I think that's really what he's talking about. Not when I sleep, of course, nor when I am in a swoon. So not when I faint and I'm unconscious, and not when I'm drugged, when I'm under anesthesia. And so then Nisargadatta says, during your waking hours, are you continually self-conscious? And that's a really good question. What I have found is that even what we would call the ignorant, right? Not the awakened, but the ignorant. Everybody gets involved in some activities occasionally to the degree that they are not self-conscious. They lose themselves in it. A perfect example is you can completely lose yourself in a movie. For example, you can be so caught up in a movie, so caught up in watching that you are not in that moment self-referencing. You're not comparing the characters to you and all of that, right? That just completely stops and you get lost in the movie. Sometimes musicians, for example, get lost in their music as they're playing their music. You know, maybe people who cook or garden get lost in that type of work, right? Certainly as a teacher, I get lost in my teaching, right? Not that kind of like lost in the mind, but I mean, there's just no self-referencing. There's no self there. So we'll see what this person says. But I think everyone, somewhere in their life, there's a place where they lose the self-consciousness. And those activities, interestingly, tend to be that person's favorite activity. You know, maybe they're a runner and they lose their self-consciousness when they're running, right? Those are the activities that people go to again and again. And the reason for that is it's the self-referencing or the self-consciousness that causes our suffering. You know, like I use the example, because Malcolm's kind of new to me, so I'm picking on him. So I'm using the example, oh, look, Malcolm's shown up for my teachings. What is this, like 3 times now or something? This is exciting. We got a new guy here. Yeah. But let's say after tonight, he quits coming, right? Oh, where's Malcolm? You know, if I'm referencing myself to Malcolm, if I'm, you know, giving myself some kind of a, you know, thrill that this person is showing up, and then he quits showing up, then there's going to be suffering, right? So this self-referencing, this self-consciousness, this looking at the world through the self point of view always leads to suffering. But when you lose yourself in an activity, when you are not self-referencing, when you are not self-consciousness, there's no suffering in that activity. There's only bliss. There's only joy. So lots of people have these certain activities. For some people, it's even like putting together a puzzle, you know? Lots of people have these activities that they go to because they aren't self-referencing when they're involved in that. So what really happens is they're experiencing bliss instead of suffering. So again, Nisargadatta says, during your waking hours, are you continually self-conscious? And the questioner says, no. Sometimes I am absent-minded or just absorbed. And what I was really talking about was being absorbed, right? Like the musician is absorbed in the music and therefore there's no self. Nisargadatta says, are you a person during the gaps in self-consciousness? And the questioner says, of course I am the same person throughout. I remember myself as I was yesterday and yesteryear. Definitely, I am the same person. But I will say that that person answered the question from the intellect, not from the experience. When you are absorbed in an activity, you know, let's say you're a runner and you get lost in the running every day. There's no self-referencing. There's just the bliss of running, right? There's no self there. There's no person there. There's running happening. There's being happening. But literally, in the time that you are absorbed in that activity, there's no person because there's no self-referencing. I mean, sure, there's a body running down the road. But if you're really absorbed, there's no thought of me, right? That's the point. So when this person says, of course I am the same person throughout, I remember myself as I was yesterday and yesteryear, definitely I am the same person. This person's just looking at the mind and thinking logically rather than looking at the actual experience. You know, if you look at the actual experience, whenever you're absorbed, you would say, I was not there. There was a witnessing presence. I was the witnessing presence, and that way I was there. But my mind, my personality was not there. My sufferings were not there. My identifications were not there. There was just this flow. People often describe it as a flow, right? There was just this flow. And what's really interesting is that every person somewhere in their life has this experience, which means every person has had a taste of no self, you know, little tastes, but every person has had a taste of no self. Therefore, at some level, because the ego likes to think no self is scary, therefore, at some level, we actually know that's not true. In fact, those are our most blissful, most enjoyable experiences. I mentioned the other night in a teaching that in the 7 Years in Tibet movie, when the Austrian climber is meeting with the Dalai Lama as a child, and the Dalai Lama is asking the Austrian climber, why do you like mountain climbing? He describes the experience of no thought, of absolute clarity, of being in the moment. And of course, he has to do that to make sure he doesn't fall. He does very dangerous mountain climbing. He has to be very aware. But that's why he loves it. You know, he loves the experience of no thought. He loves the experience of being in the moment. He loves that clear mind. These are what he describes. In other words, he loves the no self experience. Uh-oh, I lost Malcolm. Oh, there he is. Yeah. All right, so you have a cat there, we see.
Yeah.
All right, so he says that sometimes he is absent-minded or just absorbed. And Nisargadatta says, are you a person during the gaps in self-consciousness? And he says, of course I am the same person throughout. I remember myself as I was yesterday and yesteryear. Definitely I am the same person. Now Nisargadatta is calling him on this. So to be a person, you need memory. Now, that's an interesting thing to look at too. And the questioner just says, of course. But I actually kind of agree with the questioner. We'll see what Nisargadatta says next. But what makes me feel like a person is memory. And associating all these moments together, linking them together in my mind and saying, that's all me, right? That was me when I was 5. That was me when I was 10. That was me. If I didn't have all of that linked together in memory, if I only had this moment in my mind, right, I would not see myself as a person. You know, I kind of need to connect all those dots together and creating a story about who I am and holding that story in my own mind. So Nisargadatta says, so to be a person, you need memory. And the questioner says, of course, which I agree with. Then Nisargadatta says, and without memory, what are you? Right? So I don't know if you can imagine for a moment, but imagine for a moment from this second prior, there's nothing. There's just now. Who are you? What are you? You know, all of the many things that you might identify with, you couldn't identify with, because guess what? They're memories. You don't have any of those right now. There's just this here and nothing else. So what are you? The questioner says, incomplete memory entails incomplete personality. Without memory, I cannot exist as a person. Nisargadatta says, surely you can exist without memory. Now notice Nisargadatta is not saying as a person, right? Surely you can exist without memory. You do so in sleep. And the questioner says, only in the sense of remaining alive, not as a person. Nisargadatta says, since you admit that as a person you have only intermittent existence, can you tell me what you are in the intervals between experiencing yourself as a person? Right? So he says, you admit to having these intermittent. What he means is the guy has already told him, sometimes I'm absorbed, right? And when I'm absorbed, I'm not self-conscious. So he's saying, so you admit this. You admit that you're not always self-conscious. You're not always self-referencing. You even admit that without a memory, there couldn't be an idea of you as a person, right? So since you are admitting all of this, what are you when you're not experiencing yourself as a person? The questioner says, I am, but not as a person. Since I am not conscious of myself in the intervals, I can only say that I exist, but not as a person. You know, and again, that's what's happening when you're lost in jogging, for example, which, by the way, doesn't happen to me. I'd be suffering in jogging. But that's what happens when you're lost in jogging, right? You exist, right? But you're not a person. You're not a person. So Nisargadatta says, shall we call it impersonal existence? The questioner says, I would rather call it unconscious existence. I am, but I do not know that I am. Now that's interesting. You know, unless he just means I don't know, I'm not thinking about the fact that I am. That I would buy into. You know, I'm not thinking about the fact that I am. So at the intellectual level, you could argue I don't know that I am because you're not thinking about it. But the I am-ness is self-obvious, right? It's self-obvious. So he says, I would rather call it unconscious existence. I am, but I do not know that I am. Nisargadatta says, you have just said now, I am, but I do not know that I am. Could you possibly say it about your being in an unconscious state? Let me read that question again. I don't think I get it. You have said just now, I am, but I do not know that I am. Could you possibly say it about your being in an unconscious state? So I think the reason Nisargadatta is saying that is because the man wanted to call it unconscious existence, right? That's what he wanted to say. Nisargadatta said, can we call it impersonal existence? And the man said, I would rather call it unconscious existence. And then he said, I am, but I do not know that I am. Nisargadatta is saying, well, can you actually say I am if you were unconscious, right? So he's kind of challenging the guy's definition of it as an unconscious state instead of an impersonal existence. The questioner says, no, I could not. And so Nisargadatta says, you can only describe it in the past tense. I did not know I was unconscious in the sense of not remembering. The questioner says, having been unconscious, how could I remember and what? Nisargadatta says, were you really unconscious? Or do you just not remember? Do you just not remember that experience right now of being in the flow? Can you just not recall that to mind? And it makes perfect sense that you can't really recall this to mind perfectly, because mind wasn't, in effect, wasn't there, right? So it makes perfect sense that you can't remember it in the same way that you can remember other things. So were you really unconscious, or did you just not remember? The questioner says, how am I to tell the difference? How am I to tell the difference? Nisargadatta says, consider. Now listen to this. Consider. Do you remember every second of yesterday? He says, of course not. And Nisargadatta says, were you then unconscious? The questioner says, of course not. So you were conscious and yet you do not remember. And the questioner says, yes. Nisargadatta says, maybe you were conscious in sleep and just do not remember. The questioner says, no, I was not conscious. I was asleep. I did not behave like a conscious person. Nisargadatta says, again, how do you know? Now, you know, this, to some people, this may sound like a silly conversation, you know, because to some people, yeah, I was definitely unconscious. I was asleep. You know, why are we even going there? Why are we talking about this? But what Nisargadatta is really pointing out is our, I'm going to call it our dependence on mind. We believe what the mind says without verifying it for ourselves. So if the mind says, I'm unconscious when I'm asleep, but I was conscious yesterday during the day, even though I don't remember all of it, we just accept that and we never look at the fact, wait a minute, I don't remember yesterday. And I don't remember last night why I was sleeping. Exactly why am I saying I was conscious for part of that and not conscious for part of that, when in actuality what they have in common is that I don't remember? You know, where are my answers coming from? So he just wants the person to kind of look at how quickly we make assumptions based on past learning, past believing, but not on actual experience. You know, it would probably be more honest, instead of saying I was conscious during the day and I was unconscious during the night, just to say, I don't know, because I don't remember. Right? I don't know because I don't remember. But in I don't know because I don't remember, I am more open to a sage's teaching. I came to this sage for a reason. Something in me is telling me that he has realized something I have not yet realized. So for me to come to this sage with an open mind, with an I don't know mind, I'm going to get a lot more out of the experience than thinking I do know. So even this idea that I'm unconscious when I'm asleep, even that idea can be a block to the sage's teaching. And so Nisargadatta is challenging him on this. Why do you think that is so, when actually you just don't remember? So again, how do you know? I was told so, he says. See, it's a learned thing, right? I was told so by those who saw me asleep. That's funny. He says, all they can testify to is that they saw you lying quietly with closed eyes and breathing regularly. They could not make out whether you were conscious or not. Your only proof is your own memory. A very uncertain proof it is. And I will tell you, one thing I have learned is not to trust memory. Memory is completely warped. I mean, if Sean and I got in a discussion about what just happened today, we would probably remember different parts of today differently already. And there's no reason for Shauna and I to argue about that, because we actually don't know which one is right and which one is wrong, or we could both be wrong. Both of our memories could be warped, right? Memory is not a reliable source. So to trust your memory and to say, I am this or that, or this or that is true because I remember it, is really ridiculous. And you guys have all had experiences of people remembering things differently than you, right? You know this is true. Memory is not a reliable source. So Nisargadatta says, your only proof is your own memory, a very uncertain proof it is. And the questioner says, yes, I admit that on my own terms, I am a person. Only during my waking hours, what I am in between, I do not know. Right? So I do not know what I am when I am asleep. I do not know what I am when I'm absorbed into some activity and I lose myself. I do not know what I am when I am deep in meditation and I lose myself. And you know, I do not know is much better than sitting back with an intellectual point of view and saying, I know I'm unconscious, or I know I'm this, or I know I'm that. I do not know is a much better starting point. And in fact, Nisargadatta next says, at least you know that you do not know. Right? That's a much better starting point. At least you know that you do not know. Since you pretend not to be conscious in the intervals between the waking hours, leave the intervals alone. Let us consider the waking hours only. We're almost out of time here, but this is getting very funny because, again, I think it's funny when people are with a sage how they just don't listen and trust the sage. Nisargadatta was a very good student. He listened and trusted his teacher, right? But Nisargadatta says, let us consider the waking hours only because you've admitted you don't remember, you don't know, so let's move on. And instead of considering the waking hours only, the questioner says, I am the same person in my dreams. So, you know, he's still caught on this. And so Nisargadatta says, agreed, let us consider them together, waking and dreaming. The difference is merely in continuity. Were your dreams consistently continuous, bringing back night after night the same surroundings and the same people, you would be at a loss to know which is the waking and which is the dream. Henceforth, when we talk of the waking state, we shall include the dream state too. And the questioner agrees to that, says, I am a person in conscious relation with the world, right? Both in the dream and both in the waking state. So this is where the conversation is going to start next. They have agreed to criteria, and they're going to continue to investigate this belief that, this is going to sound funny, that this man is a person. I don't know how else to say that. They're going to continue to investigate this belief. But I would say that, and of course, I'll text you a title, Don, in a moment. But I would say that probably what's really important about what we just read, because it was kind of a funny conversation. But what's really important about what we've just read is how we hold two beliefs in our mind without any knowledge. Right, like this guy has no idea, you know, when he's asleep, he has no idea what he is, whether he's conscious, whether he's unconscious, whether there's, you know, nothing. And yet he was holding to, but I know this, I know this, I know this, I know I'm unconscious. And then finally Nisargadatta can get him to release that. So one of the things we might want to pay attention to is, what do we think we know when we don't actually know? You know, what do we think we know when we don't actually know? Because that stuff we should be able to just drop. Why would we hold on to it as if we knew it? So I'll leave you all with that. And I'll see you on Sunday night for the guiding light. All right. Good night, everyone.